Hello, Bill.
Hello, Matt.
Happy New Year, everybody, back in the DMZ.
I'm starting the new year in a way most offensive to you, Matt Lewis. I'm talking on a phone with a cord.
Bill, there's nothing. This is a slap in the face to all of us. It's an insult to every member of the DMZ community. I think it's, you know, this is 2014. I would think that you would step up. This isn't 1987.
This is my contribution to Flashback Friday. I'm talking on a on a fax machine / phone / answering machine with a cord.
Yes, you could. If you tried to do that, it would be difficult. You couldn't find a fax machine, but you managed to do it. That's okay.
But I have stepped into a time warp into my parents' house, which is why.
Is this part of your war on science?
Probably my war on sanity. I'm behind some very dated artwork and wood paneling and phone with a cord. And I've been just drowning in childcare the entire holiday break, meaning I am most unaware of the world around me. So I will. But you have contributed to the discourse today, correct?
A little bit. I've been lazy and slow to come back from vacation mode. But I did write something today, which is really kind of restating something that I've written about a few times in recent years. But there's a new Pew Research poll on the public's views on human evolution. And one of their findings is that just since 2009, fewer Republicans are likely to say that humans have evolved over time. So it's a fairly significant drop in that belief just since 2009. Over at the Atlantic, there's, and people trying to sort of look at why this happened. But there really isn't any definitive reason, why it's happened. Of course, you and I, Bill, know that sometimes the way you word polls or surveys can skew them. So, I'll take it with, I don't want to go too far with it, but it was an opportunity for me to write again how they're really, it's not mutually exclusive, that it's entirely possible for someone to be a Christian and to believe in evolution. As a rule, Catholics don't have a problem with it at all. And what I found by writing about this over the years is that even amongst Protestants, prior to the Scopes monkey trial, essentially they were very open to the possibility that evolution was part of God's plan. But since then, it's become part of this culture war. And I don't know if you have any theories, your theory of evolution, Bill, as to why, apparently, if you buy this Pew poll, more Republicans are doubting it than just a few years ago.
Well, I'm always suspicious of any kind of single poll on these types of questions, and I guess the two reasons that kind of pop up into my mind is one is the pool of Republicans changing. So it's not necessarily that, people used to believe in evolution no longer do. It's that perhaps the people who self-identify as Republicans might be a smaller pool. It might be people who are, Charles Krauthammer conservative atheists are calling themselves independents and not Republicans.
Right.
Is that what's going on here? These aren't necessarily either ors. Are there Republicans who just say stuff like that because they think it's the politically incorrect thing to do? I've always been very suspicious of polls saying we believe that Obama's a Muslim. Do you really believe that, or are you just telling the pollster that? Because it's kind of a fun thing to believe, or to pretend you believe it, even you don't really deep down believe it.
There's also the thing, and I mean, the worst example of this sort of binary choice was Fox News. I'd have to go back and look, but there was a debate in 2008 where they basically said, like, raise your hand if you believe in evolution. But there was no opportunity to expound on it. And John McCain actually had a pretty good answer where he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but something to the effect of, I believe in evolution, but when I, go outside and I look at the mountains in the sky, I know that God had a hand in that. So, but, you know, this raise your hand is sort of not enough, because there are a lot of Christians who believe that God very well may have used evolution as part of his plan, but it's being presented as this kind of binary choice where you either believe in evolution or you believe in God or you believe in Christ. You can't do both.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's really what I was trying to define. People in the poll are taking the question that way. I don't think the question really insinuated that. But if it's sort of in the ether that to say you believe in evolution means you don't believe in the Bible, you don't believe in God, that it somehow is overly simplistic question. Maybe you'll tell the pollster you don't with that basis, and maybe with some follow-up questioning you would find, well, it's not necessarily all that simple in my mind. So I don't necessarily presume this means Republicans are becoming more anti-science than they were previously, but it does perhaps get at what you and I talked with one of our last shows, where I feel like conservatives are sort of obsessed with these notions of political correctness to the point where it's hamstringing their ability to engage in the discourse in a way that makes them seem like they're in the mainstream.
Right. I do want to say one of your premise was astute, or your theory as to why this could have been skewed was astute. David Graham at The Atlantic looked into this, and he says, both Gallup and separate polling from Pew found approximately the same party ID in 2009 and 2013. So he's essentially saying that it's not that the GOP self-identified Republicans are changing. So he's saying that that's not accountable for this movement on this particular issue. There may be other problems with the way the question was worded.
I mean, do you have a sense, you know, just anecdotally? I mean, you're not only active in Washington conservative circles, but you're active in Christian circles, I assume. Do you think that people are becoming more antagonistic to evolution than they were 5 years ago? Do you notice a difference?
And my sense is actually the opposite, honestly. I mean, first, as I noted, Catholics have generally been very open to evolution as part of God's plan, and John Paul II went out of his way to reaffirm that in 1996. But I also think people like Tim Keller, who's a very prominent pastor of a church called Christ Redeemer in New York City, one of the top Protestant, sort of pastors slash theologians of our era, recently was interviewed by Eric Metaxas, who, about a year or so ago, was the author of Bonhoeffer, a great book. And he asked Tim Keller about it, and Keller said, the Bible does not teach that the earth is young. The genealogies are not complete. So he says, like, the way that some people have tried to extrapolate that the earth is only 6,000 years old, as they say, so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so. According to Keller, saying that so-and-so begat so-and-so does not denote fatherhood. It denotes ancestry. So it could have been their grandfather or their great-grandfather. And Keller went on to say, either way, it's not a deal-breaker. Quote, it's not in the Apostles' Creed, and therefore there's wiggle room. So this is a very prominent Christian pastor who is essentially saying, like, number one, it's not a deal breaker. It's not like this is going to send you to hell if you believe in evolution or if you don't. And then secondly, he's saying that the Bible doesn't really take a position on this. So my sense has been more openness, but it may be like self-selective. It may be the sorts of folks that I'm, you know, where I live, the kind of people I'm listening to, talking to. But the bottom line is, this strikes me as really odd. Why would the numbers change? And I have to look at it, but they change by, I don't know, 5 or more points, or percent. I cannot figure out why it would have changed just since 2009. There's no reason as far as I can tell. Yeah. So, okay, Bill, actually, it is today 43% of Republicans said, answered yes to the question about evolution. And it was 54% in 2009. That's a pretty significant swing, in a matter of a couple of years, really for no apparent reason. So, you know, read into that what you will, if it's a flawed, question, or if something is happening, it could just be a rejection of, you know, the culture war. But it's unclear to me why this is happening, and I am a little bit skeptical of it. But it was an excuse for me to kind of make the larger point that if you are a Christian conservative, you may or may not believe in evolution. A lot of folks think that they're not mutually exclusive.
Now, does this have implication for the Republican primary in that, all the push seems to have been on spending issues, you know, Tea Party fiscal issues, in recent months. And the social conservatives have been sort of chafing that they've been sidelined, even within the conservative movement. Even if you and I, you know, are dubious about the number, will the presidential candidates in the campaigns take the number seriously and say, okay, there's this huge constituency of, you know, fervently anti-evolution, folks, and they're concentrated in Iowa, they're concentrated in South Carolina. We still have to put a big bow in this direction, to get the nomination, and we'll worry about the general election later. Or do you think, you know, is the tie with Chris Christie and folks saying, look, we don't have to pander to these folks and we can emphasize other issues and maybe not have a smackdown over it, but, we'll still try to keep the social issues on the down low and focus on other things, to position for the general election?
Well, it is interesting because, over a year ago, long before Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty fame tripped up, had a controversial GQ interview, Marco Rubio had an interview with GQ where he, you know, I think he's like, I'm not a scientist man, you know, or something like that. But, some people thought he was trying to like pander to evangelicals possibly. And so it's possible it could influence, how politicians, especially in Iowa, approach these issues. I think a bigger problem or a bigger concern is that a story like this, and it's too far out now to matter, but if this story came out in an election, it gives an excuse for debate moderators or reporters to ask the politicians, the Republican politicians, these questions. And, unfortunately, they can be a divisive question that's sort of a wedge issue. So whatever you say, you're going to offend a certain, you know, you're either going to hurt yourself in the general or you're going to offend some primary voters. So I think it sort of invites the secular mainstream media to ask these questions. Now, if reporters and journalists do ask these questions, I'm okay with that. But what I do hope is that they allow for nuanced responses, like hopefully some of the people I've presented that, because when it's just raise your hand, If you either believe in evolution or you believe in creationism, those are the only two options. You know, I'm not a theologian, but you know, there are people who believe that God used evolution to create man and then breathed spiritual life into Adam. And so, that would be when the Bible talks about, you know, God creating man, that would be what it meant. The question is it a literal interpretation? Is it symbolic? You could very much be, a staunch believer in the Bible who essentially believes in inerrancy, believes in, the divinity of Christ, miracles, all sorts of things, and still believe in evolution. But you sort of need longer than a soundbite to make that point. And the danger is that this issue could be used as a wedge issue where if you say you believe in evolution, then what voters are hearing is, that guy's a sellout, you know. he's a liberal. And so on the other hand, if you say that you that you believe in creation, creationism, which could simply be that God, like, started this whole, the Big Bang or whatever, then there are some people who are going to say that you're, you know, that you believe in a young Earth and that you are part of the Republican war on science. So, a long way of saying, I think it's a really divisive, tough issue, even though, conservatives and Christians could have a very, I think, compelling and legitimate answer to it.
Well, but isn't this the push-pull in any primary, or any political campaign? The media, and I think also, voters, when questioning politicians, you know, want simple yes-no answers. They want to check boxes. They want to have simple copy for their pieces. And so they ask you, they want to put you on the spot, and not give you a chance to give long meandering answers that might not even address the question at all. And so they try to put things in as simplistic a form as possible. And it's the challenge for the politician, to, you know, find a way to explain themselves in a way, if nuance is called for, to get beyond the question and try to answer it without seeming evasive. I mean, that's not just an evolution problem. I mean, Hillary Clinton got tripped up on illegal immigration in 2008 because she had trouble sort of pinpointing a position. And that's her an unusual circumstance. Just another example where hot button issues are hard to talk about, you know, in nuanced ways.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think conservatives would point to the fact that most of the people asking the question tend to be secular liberals who may have stir up division on the right. But if you're
an anti-evolution fundamentalist Christian, don't you want a simple answer to that yes or no too? Don't you want to see your litmus test has been achieved?
I mean, I suppose there are some people out there. I don't know that's the huge litmus test. I mean, I'm sure there are some people out there that's, you know, their litmus test. But I would think for the vast majority of people, there are other issues. It could be gay marriage. It could be, pro-life. But I would think that there are probably more important issues. I mean, as Tim Keller mentioned, this is not, a litmus test for salvation, according to Christian theology, number one. And number two, it's not really that relevant of a political question. I mean, I suppose you could argue over whether or not textbooks in Texas should teach theory of evolution, but running for national office, I would think that, you know, where you stand on the right to life or gay marriage, I mean, those are hot button controversial issues too. I would think that those would be much more relevant to someone running for president than this issue, but it does tend to come up and this is just the latest example.
Well, shaping up as a litmus test on the left is the issue of unemployment insurance. The extended benefits lapsed as of the new year, but Harry Reid has vowed it's going to be the first vote out of the box in the Senate on Monday. I would imagine most Democrats vote for it, perhaps some of the redder state Democrats are vulnerable races. Maybe they're going to think twice. I don't know yet.
All right, let me stop you. You called it unemployment insurance. I've not heard it called that.
Well, but I'm just being technical. I mean, that's it, the benefits that the unemployed are getting come out of the unemployment insurance pool of funds.
I was just trying to see if this is like a new, lay-off, framing thing.
I think that's the name of the program, as far as what I understand.
Okay.
I tend to say jobless aid, just because I think that it's more.
It's benefits. I mean, you know, they should call it insurance more, because the left should, because insurance implies something, and this is, you know, what they always, any entitlement, I mean, Social Security or whatever. If you believe that you have paid into it and that you are literally funding the money that you are just getting back, it's going to be much more popular.
Well, I believe that is essentially the nexus of the program. I mean, it's not just employee contributions, but employer contributions too. But that's sort of the idea, that you are sort of pitching in bits here and there for when you are in need. And so it's there for you to sort of maintain, you know, your relative quality of life while you legitimately are out of work and looking for work. You know, not just not being a bum, not trying to live off the dole, not giving up on the job search, but, you're in a jam, you know, you got a family to feed, it's not just so easy just to sort of, you know, unload your house and downsize your entire lifestyle because you got laid off. So how do you maintain what you have while you're out looking for work? I mean, that's my understanding of the point of the program. And you now have this class of people, you know, so the general idea of the program is meant to be more of a short-term program. But now because of the Great Recession, the after effects of that, you have this class of people, it's about 1 million plus, who are long-term unemployed, but there's still more people out of work than there are job openings. And the people who are long-term unemployed have the hardest time getting back in because it's kind of a black mark on their resume that they've been unemployed for so long. Right. I think a lot of those folks are older too and who are harder to get rehired. So what do you do for this class of people that doesn't force them to be permanently out of work? Is it better for them to keep, this aid going, or do they just need to be cut off and, you know, learn to live off the land and so they can become hungrier to find more work? That's sort of the debate that's going on right now between left and right, which I think the right has an argument in a time when there are plentiful job opportunities. And right now we don't seem to be in that situation.
Well, I think, a couple things. One, Democrats are now, this is a good political issue for Democrats, and it's part of Obama's larger, sort of income inequality argument, which what he's talking about that he's generally winning. I think anything that distracts him from that is bad for Obama, including the Obamacare failures. So I guess where to begin? First, I would say, if Democrats, now they're sort of making this out to be a big, big deal, and maybe it is, but they didn't fight for it during the Ryan-Murray budget. They didn't fight for this, they didn't fight for raising unemployment. And so I would question now their argument that they care so much and that Republicans need to do the right thing. You made a point, Bill, about how, you know, unemployment benefits could be a crutch and could actually prolong the problem. It's such a hard argument to make politically. It just sounds so horrible, but, you know, it does make sense that, you know, two things could be true. One is if you are getting benefits, you may be less likely to take a job that isn't perfect, that pays less money than you used to make or is in the field that you prefer to be in. You could argue that that's a good thing, that, you know, it's not good for the economy in the long term for people to take jobs that are out of their skill set. But you could also argue it'd be better for them to go to work doing something, and that the benefits make it less likely that they will, which means they'll be out of work longer, which means it's actually ironically less likely that they'll get hired, because the longer they're out of the work, the less likely it is that they'll get hired. I did, there are some interesting ideas floating around. I've heard people like Charles Krauthammer and Harold Ford. This isn't to do with the long-term unemployment per se, but in terms of minimum wage, which I think is tied into this larger issue, they brought up ideas like paying breadwinners more. This has a problem. It means people will be less likely to hire breadwinners, possibly. They'll hire high school students and pay them minimum wage. In terms of the specific issue of the unemployment benefits, Michael Strain at AEI has some interesting ideas, earned income tax credits, travel vouchers or relocation vouchers. If you live in Nevada and it's a bad economy and you want to move to North Dakota to, you know, 4% unemployment, rather than paying somebody not to work, why don't we pay them to move to North Dakota? Give them a one-time lump bonus when they get there. These are some creative ideas that sort of eschew this binary choice. So it's rejecting the notion of let them eat cake, but it's also rejecting the notion that the only tool at our disposal is unemployment benefits. I do hope that there's more discussion about some of these creative ideas.
Well, I think, and it's not to endorse any of those specific ideas, but I think Republicans would be in better shape if they were perceived as having a Jobs plan of some sort. I mean, I don't think that perception, I mean, what you generally hear from Republicans when it comes to jobs is kind of the standard. If we cut taxes and cut regulation, we'd unleash the power of the free markets and more jobs would be there. And sort of, that seems to not really, you know, make the sale, I think, to a lot of folks in the middle right now. So if there was a sense like, you know what, I don't really believe in this extended UI, but I had this other idea for right. these long-term unemployed, which we all agree is a very difficult problem to solve, and there's no easy solutions, but we have this package, and we're going to put that on the table in some kind of, you know, formal way, and then maybe we can have some kind of conversation about jobless aid and split the difference. You know, that, I think, would put them in a much better stead. And that now it just seems like we just want to be cheap and not spend money, and we don't care that you're going to, you know, fall off the edge. I mean, I don't think that the meshing on the Republican side it comes across as much better than that.
Yeah. I think you're right. And I think, honestly, like, you know, why is it that our only two options are to either do nothing, let them eat cake, or pay people to not work? Why? There's nothing else we can do. We're smart people. We've got, you know, something like Fredo. I'm smart. I mean, there are other options that we can do. And again, I mean, one option, it wouldn't work for everybody. But if you were young, if you live in Detroit, you may need to move if you want to get a job. I mean, this is that simple. And if someone, now if you're upside down on a house and you've got a bunch of kids and you're, you know, 50 years old, you probably can't move. But if you're young, you need to move. And, it would be cheaper and better to pay somebody to move to a place and actually get a job that really wants one than to pay them not to work. So I agree, though. I think that, you know, check it out. I've written about this a couple times. Google my name and Michael Strain at AEI. He's got some interesting ideas. I don't agree with all of them, but they're creative solutions.
There's plenty of people on the left that support in general the idea of transportation assistance to help people get jobs. I mean, it's usually talked about in more of a commuter setting than actually long distance relocation. But it's a similar concept. You know, how do you help people who want to work, who are able to work, get to where the job is? You know, that basic idea, you know, has currency on the left. And so this is the kind of thing where if on the right there is, if on the left and the right there's a shared agreement, long-term unemployment is a problem that government action needs to solve. You can't just wait and let the market solve it because these people will just fall off the edge. They'll become unemployable, period. Government has to step in and do something. If you're debating what the something is, it's much easier to get to, you know, some kind of compromise. I mean, conservatives right now aren't saying abolish unemployment insurance, period. They're debating the length of time.
Well, look,
and negotiate what other kind of job assistance that you offer. I mean, there's certainly room to find compromise there.
Well, look, I think Republicans would be hesitant to open up a new front in the entitlement world where now you're entitled to health insurance and a ride to work. I mean, that might be the unfortunate logical conclusion of this. But you're right. Republicans support, I mean, right now it's 26 weeks. That's a long time, to be paid to be out of work. And I think honestly, Republicans would support extending it if it's paid for. They don't want to do it without paying for it, which is a good idea. But if the Democrats can find revenue somewhere, move some money around, I think Republicans would support extending. So as I was saying, you know, the bottom line I think is that, you know, I don't think either side wants to be, you know, uncompassionate. I do think that the economy turning around is the fact that we're worrying about raising, minimum wage or wringing our hands about extending unemployment is really an indictment on us and on the economy, which Obama's now been in charge of for 5 years. Really the solutions to grow jobs, to change the economy, to get things going again so people are out there competing to hire people. If we have to do something in the short term, then let's be smart about it and be open to some creative solutions.
Well, I think the GDP numbers have actually been pretty good, you know, last couple of quarters, and the job growth numbers are starting to, you know, ramp up.
To turn it around.
What's that?
It could, I mean, maybe it'll turn, maybe in a year it's a moot point. Maybe
I think the economy's been sort of on a slow mend, you know, which is kind of frustrating and also sort of tricky. When do you stop the aid? When does the Fed pull back? You know, when do you stop with the extended unemployment benefits? What's the right point? You can do it too early sometimes, but we're kind of, you know, the ship is starting to turn, and the question becomes, when is it that, do you see yourself there? Yeah. I'm sure I've made my point somehow in some way. I can't tie it off. But you have to run too, right?
Yeah, I gotta bounce. All right, good show. Thank you everybody for sticking with us another year, and we'll see you back here next week in the DMZ.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.